From the land to Grand Teton University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 28th day of July, 2025. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at agmarket.net. We'll discuss tariffs, trade, and negotiations and how those are impacting the marketplace and why supply really does seem to be the important thing at the moment. We'll do that with Chad Hart at Iowa State University Extension in Ames, and then we'll turn our attention to the weather forecast. We'll do that with Mark Russo of Everstream Analytics on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium. It is public radio for the farming world, online, on demand, anytime you'd like to listen to us. Look us up as a podcast. Search out the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
September corn for the day at $3.93¾, down 5¾. December at $4.14 on this Monday, a nickel lower. And the March settled at $4.31¼. It was down 5¼ cents for the afternoon. The soybeans in the August at $9.88¾, a dime lower. The September at $9.92½, down 9½ cents. And new crop November, $10.11½, 9½ lower. Bean meal futures down $2.90. The bean oil, 6 cents higher, and wheat futures for the soft red in the December contract just a half cent higher at $5.58¾ a bushel. The hard red at $5.46¾, down a penny for the day. Live cattle futures after the Friday USDA report finished the October $224.77½ for the live cattle, $1.62½ higher. Feeder cattle up $2.35 for 100 pounds at $334.55, and lean hogs 27½ cents higher at $90.87½. Crude oil around $1.46 higher at $66.63 a barrel. The wholesale price of diesel fuel at $2.43, 2¼ cents higher, and gasoline on the RBOB up 3¾ cents at $2.10¼. We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel. He's at agmarket.net to discuss these numbers. Thanks so much for being with us, Kurt. I hope you had a great weekend, if maybe a little rainfall, a lot of rainfall possibly.
Boy, it was humid. We had a family wedding event, and I had to wear a jacket there for a while, but I went through two shirts, but we made it. Unbelievable.
Wow. Well, it remains humid and hot, hot, hot. However, the marketplace is kind of cold, cold, cold. Can you tell me why that is the case today?
Oh, boy, yeah. It just no giddy up to it at all. The forecast itself, even though it's warm, it does have moisture around. In fact, maybe too much moisture, some areas. But the temperature is expected to cool as we move into the weekend. And next week, warm up somewhat. But the trade is really not real concerned about weather right at the moment. There is concern, though, about fungus and disease and so forth. So we'll see how that affects the crop. This afternoon's crop conditions report's just about unchanged from last week. Expected to be about 74% good to excellent on corn. Soybeans are expected to be about 68% good to excellent. Wheat harvest about 82% complete. Seasonally, actually, the good to excellent category starts to turn down here as the crop mature. So seasonally, here in the next week or two, we should see the good to excellent conditions kind of pull back somewhat. As far as today's, last night's price action, there's talk, of course, of the trade deal with the EU. They're supposed to purchase about $750 billion in U.S. goods from the U.S. and invest about $600 billion into the U.S. as these other countries negotiate. Eventually, we'll probably see, hopefully see some numbers here before Friday, August 1st is kind of what the deadline's been advertised. But the big trade talk, of course, will be U.S. and China. They're in Stockholm here this week, and odds are they'll make some headway here and try to extend some deadlines. As everyone knows, China's a big one, as we're in the key time window in here for them to make some purchases, because these purchases need to be made so these ag products, particularly beans, can be moved to a logistic location here so we can ship it out here later this winter time.
Speaking of the export market, corn exports continue to look fairly good. What can you tell me about that place?
Yeah, sales are there. We sold 225,000 tons of corn to Mexico, so another 229,000 tons of unknown. That unknown sale was, a chunk of that was new crop. We wrap up the marketing here at the end of August, so any old crop business needs to take place and needs to be shipped. And shipments were fantastic today. We shipped out 59.9 million bushels of corn, 15 million bushels of beans. The corn number was above trade expectations, and the soybean shipments were at the upper end of expectations. So overall, demand's been good for the most part, but it's the future demand that the trade's being concerned about, particularly with the corn in the southern hemisphere coming on the market. Then, two, Argentina, they lowered their export tax. Bean exports tax was 33%, it's bumped down to 26%. Meal tax is 31%, it was moved down to 24.5%. So it's going to keep grain from Brazil and Argentina on the world market, and they're our main competition here as we go into this fall.
Well, so the competition will be offset probably by sales to other places, unless, of course, there continues to be an issue with the world's largest buyer, China, and that is in the Trump administration's court at this point. We've taken that up already a couple of times. I do want you to turn your attention to last Friday and the USDA cattle inventories and on feed numbers. Can you tell me about those and the impact they had in Chicago today?
Yeah, if you wanted some giddy up, it'd been in the cattle market here earlier this morning, especially right out of the chute, on feed 98.4%, pretty close to the average guess, but placements 92%, the average guess was 98. Marketing's 95.6, the average guess was 96.4. Inventory-wise, the cattle on all cattle and calves 98.7%, beef cows 98.8%, dairy cattle 100.5%, and the annual calf crop 98.6%. You know, we're just not seeing expansion. When you visit with beef guys, you know, it's awful lucrative to move instead of retain it through here. So at some point in time in here, until we actually see some heifer retention take place, we're going to continue to see a tight situation. The other thing on the world market, whether or not we see these feeders come north out of Mexico due to screwworm, and also to Brazil, and we need to see what happens to the terror as far as meat coming into the U.S. from Brazil.
Hey, thanks much, Kurt.
You bet. Take care.
You too. Kurt Kimmel is with AgMarket.net. We're now joined by Chad Hart, agricultural economist at Iowa State University in Ames, an extension ag econ specialist there. Thank you very much, Chad, for taking some time with us. There have been a series of announcements of trade agreements, trade frameworks that the president has put forth over the last week. They include Japan, Indonesia, a couple of others, and just this week, the EU or the European Union, and he is working with the UK this week as well. I'm wondering how you see these agreements and what the trade reaction, in your opinion, has been.
Well, that's the deal. The trade reaction has sort of just been there. If you will, the ag markets have sort of just sort of treaded water for a while as we go through this trade and tariff uncertainty. But when we look at the frameworks that have been put forward, you know, the idea is that the U.S. is putting on at least a minimum of a 10 to 15% tariff on almost everybody. But same time, too, we're exempting certain products. And that's one of the things I'm watching to see is how those other countries are responding with their tariff rates. And for the most part, what we're finding is that we're not seeing any reciprocal tariffs on the part of those other countries onto the U.S., which is good news for U.S. agriculture. But it also brings up the question of what are we really gaining from this here as we're looking? Because I know in the case of the EU framework, it sounds like several agricultural products were exempted where it's a zero for zero tariffs, where neither the U.S. nor the EU are placing a tariff on those goods.
It is almost like watching the weather work its way into the marketplace. Instead of a premium, it's a discount, relatively speaking. And whatever the trade is or the crop size is normal until it's not, and we're still kind of watching that. I think there is a discount within the in the marketplace. You can tell me whether you believe that is the case or not, too, at least for trade still. However, it is supply side that seems to be driving this market. How good is the corn crop in the state of Iowa?
Well, that's the deal. It looks really good, but I think it's one of those cases, again, where we're trying to figure out whether looks are again, deceiving. I think for a lot of folks, we've been hearing a lot of discussion about, you know, tar spot and spots. Been hearing a lot about tight tassel wrap. At the same time, too, these are not issues you spot from the roadway. And when we're looking from the roadway, what we've got is our crops that have gotten, you know, a good amount of moisture, especially compared to previous years. You know, a crop that went in the ground in a timely manner. It's looking good. And I think that you're right. The idea is that, you know, those supplies, and especially on the corn side, that projection of record yield and record production is weighing heavily on the market.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt that there is a second crop or Safrina corn crop in Brazil that is also big and coming into the market more than maybe we expected just because the size was there.
Yep, the size is there, but I'll say this as well. The demand globally has been there. One of the things that has fascinated me, especially with these past 2-3 months, is watching the continued strength that U.S. corn has had in the global market despite that Safrina crop coming online. It just goes to show that world demand right now was strong enough to eat through not only the U.S. crop, but continue to take on that Safrina crop as well. And we continue to see really good flows.
When you think about old and new crop at this point, many producers will look at that old crop ending stocks number. And I talked with Joe Jansen late last week about this. He wrote a Farm Doc Daily article about it, in fact, and the impact it has going forward. But mostly it's about the impact that the size of the coming crop is having on the trade as it's waiting for those supplies to come in. Is that your opinion as well?
Yeah, it is my opinion as well. I mean, anytime we're staring at the potential of not only a record crop, but a record by over 350 million bushels, that's just a stunning amount of possible production coming in here within the next, you know, couple of months. And so I think that is having, let's call it an overweighted experience in the markets today relative to a normal crop.
When you talk to hog producers in the state of Iowa, I'd like to discuss the availability of soybean meal and the biofuels push. That would be for oil. It just seems to me that there might be an awful lot of meal available. Will they expand herds?
Right now, I'd say the economics are sort of split on that. The idea is what we continue to see is, you know, we brought the breeding herd down a little bit, but we continue to be able to produce a pig crop that which is creating growth when it comes to pork supplies. And so right now, I think they could expand a little bit, especially as we continue to see meal supplies continuing to build and those prices continue to soften there. But one of the things I'm also watching again here as well is not only will we use a little more meal here, but we're going to have to export that meal as well. And that's one of the things USDA is definitely projecting as we move forward.
That will be a drag on the soybean price and futures?
It will be a little bit of a drag. But I think in this case, we're looking at the strength in the oil and just the demand and the soybean crush, hopefully being enough to offset some potential export losses.
What are farmers telling you about their marketing so far?
They're basically, you know, wondering where the seasonal, you know, typical late spring, early summer rally went, and trying to figure out, do I need to make some moves here, or is it going to get worse for me as I look out there? And I think a lot of folks, you know, let's face it, we're still cleaning up some old crop. And trying to figure out, okay, just how much room do we have to put new crop into storage to try to hold on for next spring and look for that rally again.
I was contemplating over the weekend the potential size of my own corn crop and then, of course, doing the multiplication. It would be a good year, even at a low price, if the bushels are there. I suppose that has to be something producers need to think about.
It is something you have to think about here, and the idea is, again, what we're hoping for is not only a good crop, but, you know, if you get a good crop that comes out of the field, you know, at a good moisture that is, you know, maintains that storage capability out there, it just gives you more time to possibly realize some price recovery with that good crop.
Any final word?
I think one of the big things here that, like I say, continue to watch is, I'm fascinated by, let's call it the strange trade that we're in. The idea is we're continuing to see export pace on old crop look really good. Will that translate for us as we're looking for new crop? Because we're going to need that international boost to work through these larger crops we think we're bringing in this fall.
Thank you much. I appreciate it, Chad.
Thank you.
Chad Hart is an agricultural economist at Iowa State University in Ames. Just one agricultural news item for the day. This a follow-up to the Friday announcement by USDA. Critics are decrying the USDA agency reorganization plan announced last week by Agriculture Secretary Brooke Rollins. In a written statement, Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota, who sits on the Senate Ag Committee, condemned the plan as half-baked and called for USDA officials to appear before Congress, saying a reorganization of this scale would impact USDA's ability to provide critical services. Rebecca Wolf, a senior policy analyst at Food and Water Watch Senior Food, went on to say that the move further guts the government's ability to protect public health, the environment, and food safety. The real-world consequences will be severe, she believes. The reorganization is at least partly a cost-cutting measure, according to Rollins, and staff to be relocated outside of the Washington, D.C. area could see significant salary reductions, that to the lower cost of living rates. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Monday afternoon. Our theme music is written, performed, produced, and courtesy of Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. Do visit our website. The address is willag.org, willag.org. There you'll find the latest information from the crop scientist, the agricultural economist, and the animal scientist located right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Now let's turn our attention to the weather forecast for the growing regions across the planet. Mark Russo is here from Everstream Analytics. Good afternoon, Mark. Thank you for being with us again on this Monday.
Hello there, Todd.
Let's start in the Midwest. Quite the rainstorm over the weekend, at least where I am. And we had another one roll through this morning. We certainly weren't the only part in the Midwest that received rain. Tell me about those weekend precipitation events.
Yeah, overall across, especially the swath, right, kind of in and around I-80 and about, give it 40 or 50 miles north and south of there, that was the zone of the most significant rainfall. And some areas picked up several inches of rainfall, a lot of that happening in a short amount of time as a result of some of the heavier thunderstorm activity. But with this weekend's rains, it's just been a continuation of what we've actually seen throughout much of July with, you know, active pattern near to above normal rainfall. And some of those most anomalous wetness has been centered here in Illinois and kind of areas like Iowa and adjacent areas of Missouri, too.
It remains hot, humid. Will we continue to have storms over the next several days?
Well, yes, and that is still part of, like you said, this hot and humid pattern that's going to be in place for the next 2 to 3 days. So especially across areas of the central and northern Midwest, there will be additional thunderstorm complexes developing over the next few days. As we get into late this week and over the weekend, that's where we see actually cooler temperatures working their way in and drier conditions for a relatively brief period of time. So a bit of a respite here coming up from the heat, humidity, and thunderstorm activity. As you go into later on next week, it does look like, well, temperatures still stay seasonal, some rainfall opportunities, but again, a different pattern compared to what we're seeing right now.
Well, tell me about that pattern and what it might mean for the month of August.
Yeah, what we're watching here is we get into, you know, call it more like week two and week three of August, beginning to see at least temperatures warm back up again, climbing to warmer than normal levels. Right now, it doesn't look as hot and humid as what's occurring, you know, right now here, starting out the week in the Midwest. And from a rainfall standpoint, it certainly is looking less active. And something to keep an eye on and to monitor, especially for soybeans going through pod development next month. But having said all this, the soil moisture base across the Midwest right now is exceptionally good. And in order for things to, you know, quickly turn detrimental, well, we don't see any indications of that right now. And even, you know, with a warmer, drier end of August, that might not even result in any kind of, you know, negative impacts for crop development, given the current state of things.
Are there places around the planet in the Northern Hemisphere that you're still watching closely?
Yeah, we're watching Europe and the Black Sea region. Again, they're in a mode right now of additional rain activity and now cooler temperatures across the region, helping to stabilize or improve summer crop development, especially corn that has been going through corn pollination. That looks to continue for much of the next 2 weeks. After that, it does look like drier and warmer weather will return to more of Europe. In fact, hotter than normal temperatures look to start building into Western Europe days 11 to 15, and then that would expand eastward as we get into more of the middle portion of August. So something to watch here longer term. But as of right now, this relief that Europe and the Black Sea region is seeing for summer crops, it's beneficial.
Hey, thanks much. I appreciate it. We'll talk with you again next week.
You're welcome. Sounds great, Todd.
Mark Russo is with Everstream Analytics. Joined us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report that came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Don't forget to visit our website. The address there is willag.org. And in the list of articles that you can read, you'll find one that's titled Empowering Illinois Soybean Producers. Later this week, there is a United Soybean Board webinar that you can sign up for, which will offer you $350 if you're one of the first 25 to do so. Make sure that you read up on that. Get yourself signed up for that Empowering Illinois Soybean Producers event in cooperation with USB, the Illinois Soybean Association, the Midwest Regional Climate Center, and Illinois Extension. You have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.